crucial to understanding the Buddhist concept of consciousness and its rejection of the reducibility of mind to matter is its theory of causation. The issue of causality has long been a major focus of philosophical and contemplative analysis in Buddhism. Buddhism proposes two principal categories of cause. These are the substantial cause and the contributory or complementary cause. Take the example of a clay pot. The substantial cause refers to the stuff that turns into a particular effect, namely the clay that becomes the pot. By contrast, all the other factors that contribute towards bringing about the pot, such as the skill of the potter himself, and the kiln that fired the clay, remain complementary in that they make it possible for the clay to turn into the pot. This distinction between the substantial and contributory cause of a given event or object is of the utmost importance for understanding the Buddhist theory of consciousness. According to Buddhism, though consciousness and matter can and do contribute toward the origination of each other, one can never become a substantial cause of the other. In fact, it is on this premise that the Buddhist thinkers like Dharmakirti have rationally argued for the tenability of the theory of rebirth. Dharmakirti's argument can be formulated as follows. The consciousness of a newborn infant comes about from a preceding instance of cognition, which is an instance of consciousness just like the present moment of consciousness. The issue revolves around the argument that the various instances of consciousness we experience come into being because of the presence of preceding instances of consciousness. And since matter and consciousness have totally different natures, the first moment of consciousness of the new being must be preceded by its substantial cause, which must be a moment of consciousness. In this way, the existence of a previous life is affirmed. Some other Buddhist thinkers, such as Bhavavivika in the 6th century, have tried to argue for pre-existence on the basis of habitual instincts, such as the newborn calf's instinctive knowledge of where to find its mother's teats and how to suck milk. These thinkers make the case that without assuming some form of pre-existence, the phenomenon of innate knowledge cannot be coherently explained. Regardless of how persuasive these arguments are, there are many examples of very young children with apparent memories of previous lives, not to mention the numerous recollections of the Buddha's own past lives found in the scriptures. I know of a remarkable case of a young girl from Kanpur in the Indian state of Uttar Pradesh in the early 1970s. Although initially her parents dismissed the girl's descriptions of a second set of parents in a place she described specifically, the girl's accounts were so concrete that they began to take her seriously. When the two whom she claimed to be her parents during her previous life came to see her, she told them very specific details of their deceased child's life, which only a close member of the family could have known. As a result, when I met her, the other two parents had also fully embraced her as a member of their family. This is only anecdotal evidence, but such phenomena cannot be easily dismissed. Reams have been written on the analysis of this form of Buddhist reasoning, the technical aspects of which lie outside the scope of the present discussion. The point I wish to make is that Dharmakirti clearly did not think that the theory of rebirth was purely a matter of faith. He felt that it falls within the purview of what he characterized as slightly hidden phenomena, which can be verified by means of inference.